Welcome to the Crozier Vision podcast. This edition, which was recorded on Wednesday the 29th of June 2011, features Michael Jennings. Michael is probably best known for blogging at SamusData, though he ought to be best known for blogging at TransferBlog. Here we talk about what you can learn from watching TV in bars and cafes abroad.
In September 2007, I was having a weekend away from London, and I was in Riga in Latvia. Now, Riga is one of those Eastern European capital cities where you sit in an outdoor square, and there is a whole lot of cafes around the outdoor square, and you sit there and you drink beer as the light fades in the evening, basically. And these cafes in the outdoor squares, like cafes almost everywhere these days, had sort of large screen TVs for the customers to watch as they were drinking their beer and sort of whiling the evening away. And at that time, the Northern Rock, is it a building society or a bank? It doesn't matter.
It was a building society.
It was having a bank run in England, and this was the beginning of the financial crisis, I suppose. And the TV news channels have a certain grammar about them, and a lot of this grammar was invented immediately after the crisis of September 11, 2001. You typically the screen will be divided into two. There will be a talking head on one part of the screen. There will be words on the other side of the screen, and there'll be a ticker going along the bottom. And I saw pretentious things in Russian being written on the right of the screen. Shots of people standing in long lines outside a bank in England on the main section of the screen, and there was a ticker in Cyrillic writing going along the bottom of the screen. And of course, as is usually the case when you're in a foreign
I hate to interrupt. This may be going off on a tangent, but I'm trying to imagine it, because this is Latvia, and Latvians don't like the Russians much, with good reason. And Latvian, I believe, is written in Latin script, isn't it?
Latvian most certainly is written in Latin script, and Latvian is not quite a Slavic language, but it's certainly a different family of languages to Russian. The point is that if you are going to run a 24-hour news channel, then small countries can't do it, because you need quite a lot of resources to actually run a 24-hour news channel.
So I was beginning to wonder. So they're getting their news from Russia then?
I mean, it's one of the things about, I mean, if you're watching news channels in a bar or a cafe anywhere, the news channel will be a sort of satellite television channel which has a minority audience, and it will typically come from the closest center of power. If you're in a particular sphere of influence, then the TV news channel will come from the capital of that sphere of influence. And so, even though the Latvians don't like the Russians very much, they're very close to Russia, and you can feel the Russian power. And one consequence of this is that the Russian TV channels are the ones which are on in the bars and the squares. On this particular instance, I could almost feel the sound was turned down, as often is the case. And, I mean, that's one reason why there's so much text on TV news channels everywhere.
Well, Michael, that was the other tangent I wanted to go off on. You were saying about the grammar of this was being invented after 9/11.
A lot of it, I think, yeah.
I'm sort of a bit surprised, because it seems to me that the TV news has been the same as long as I can remember, and maybe there was a change in the mid-90s when things got
a fair bit of
are we talking about widescreens here? Is that part of the deal?
I think the widescreen may be a big part of it. But certainly you turn on a TV news channel and there is a constant flicker, there is a constant ticker of news going along the bottom of the screen. I don't remember those tickers before September the 11th. And I don't remember, I don't think I've seen a 24-hour TV news channel without a ticker since September the 11th.
Yeah.
Uh, I mean, one thing is that
I mean, presumably it's not actually the September 11th that did it. It's just simply it happened about the same time.
Yeah, it probably would have happened. It probably would have happened anyway, but that particular event led to them wanting to stream a lot of news at the same time, I think. And I think the other thing is this was an event in which people watched news channels in public places. And one of the things about watching TVs in bars and cafes and places is that they often have the sound turned down. And for a TV news channel to be useful with the sound turned down, the news has got to be shown in text as well as spoken. And I mean, the interesting thing I discovered on that night in Latvia was that you can pretty much figure out the story even if you can't read the text or hear the words. I mean, I could just imagine a scolding voice talking about the British people standing in the queue outside the bank and saying, this wouldn't be happening if these people had a strong leader like Vladimir Putin. It's just.
But that's all you've got to go on is the pictures.
Yeah, I mean the pictures, but there's a certain, just like there's a grammar of motion pictures, there's a grammar of TV news. I mean, I was when Osama bin Laden was killed last month, I was actually in Morocco at the time, and I actually heard that he'd been killed because a friend of mine sent me an email, which I checked on my Kindle in my hotel room. But then I went downstairs and sat in the cafe for a couple of hours watching the Pan-Arabic TV news channels in cafes in Morocco about the death of Osama bin Laden, which was quite interesting in that you would see a picture of Osama bin Laden with, again, a ticker in Arabic, which I didn't understand, and then they would then you would see in the other corner of the screen a picture of David Cameron saying something, and then Nicolas Sarkozy saying something, and then Barack Obama probably got the whole screen, whereas Cameron would only get the corner. And I think I don't know. It would be interesting to know what if I'd just gone into the cafe without having known that Osama bin Laden had been killed, how quickly I would have figured out what the actual story was. I think pretty fast. When they crossed to some guy in a beard wearing a fez standing on the south bank of the Thames with the Palace of Westminster in the background, of this guy ranting in Arabic, I don't know what he was saying, but I think I got his message just the same. So I mean, watching TV news in foreign places is interesting. I mean, the thing you mentioned about the Russian in Latvia is interesting because you can feel the sphere of influence. You can feel what sphere of influence you are in instantly by seeing the language of the TV channels and the source of the TV channels. As I said, I was in Morocco, and it's instantly pan-Arab, but it's pan-Arab influenced by other places too. I mean, it's pan-Arab coming out of the United Arab Emirates.
The broadcaster is broadcasting from UAE.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I see.
Oh, yeah. Well, the broadcasters are broadcasting either from Dubai or Abu Dhabi, well, probably Dubai or maybe Qatar too, which isn't in the UAE, but it's another one of the Gulf states.
Wow.
And of course, the interesting thing about Morocco is that never in my life have I seen a place with so many satellite dishes on roofs. Clearly, the local television is so bad or so censored that they don't want to watch it, and so therefore they're watching foreign TV coming from pan-Arab channels mostly. Probably some French channels too, but mostly pan-Arab channels.
And they allow this. The authorities allow this.
Well, Morocco is not a very repressive place. Morocco is.
But the TV's rubbish.
Certainly, Morocco is a repressive enough place for the local TV to be rubbish, but not a repressive enough place for them to stop you from watching foreign TV.
Oh.
And hence you get more satellite dishes than has ever been seen anywhere else. The other thing, which of course is interesting, is that if you go into a cafe which isn't watching news channels, and you go into a cafe which is showing sort of more entertainment and music-y channels, the interesting thing there, I think, is the Bollywood influence, in that those satellite TV channels coming out of Dubai or Qatar, these are Arab states, but these are Arab states in which all the people who do any actual work are from India or Pakistan. And so I think the cultural influence on Arab TV of Bollywood is actually quite profound. I don't know, it's not even always deliberate.
Sorry, Michael, when we say Bollywood, do we mean the Bollywood movie with all the dancing? Or do we mean something else?
We mean things fairly closely derived from the Bollywood movie with all the dancing. In the sense that I sat in a different bar in Morocco, this was in Fez, and I sat down and there was again, it was a very melodramatic sort of movie or soap opera being shown on the TV. Now, it was clearly not made in India itself, but it was made in the style of Bollywood. It's the sort of melodramatic thing in that the daughter comes from the very pretty daughter comes from the rich family, and she wants to marry the poor but handsome man, and her parents don't like this, and then they have a song and dance number, and then the house burns down for no adequately explained reason, and then they have another song and dance number, and eventually everybody's reconciled at the end. I mean, it was that plot, and it was Bollywood-style song and dance numbers. Probably the girls were wearing slightly more clothes than would be the case in a genuine Bollywood one, but still there were slightly more bare midriffs than I was expecting. It was clearly set in a Muslim sort of place, in that there were mosques in the background and things like this. Whether this was something made specifically by probably Pakistanis for Arab TV, or was it a Pakistani program being broadcast on Arab TV, I'm not entirely sure. But as I said, the grammar, well, I'm talking about grammar a lot here, but the grammar of it and the style of this was entirely Bollywood. And I don't know if it was even deliberately.
I want to explain. We've mentioned the word grammar a few times, and I sort of, you know, intuitively understand it. But can we explain this at all, do you think?
Well, I mean, you go and see a movie, go and see a Hollywood movie.
Yes, I mean, but there's things like the camera angles and where they cut, and
it's the camera angles and where they cut and what the cut is understood to mean. And what this particular sort of type of music in a particular place implies emotionally, and all things like this. I mean, if you take an adult who's never seen a Hollywood movie before to see a Hollywood movie, there may not be any adults in the world who've never seen a Hollywood movie before. But if you take somebody who's never seen a Hollywood movie to see a Hollywood movie, it's very, very difficult to understand, because there are all these implied things in the way the movie is made that you understand because you've seen so many movies before, and the grammar of a Bollywood movie, what the particular camera angles means, what particular shots means, what particular music means, what a particular style of dance means, is different from a Western movie. Hollywood and Bollywood movies are constructed differently. And as I said, what I'm seeing on Arab TV in bars in Morocco, well, not bars, in cafes in Morocco, it's just influenced incredibly strongly by India, and that is because the people who are making these movies, probably for and on behalf of the Arabs, are people who have come from that environment, and that is just the way they personally think in film terms. It's very interesting.
It also seems to imply that the Arab world or the Muslim world itself hasn't come up with an awful lot of fiction or movies.
I don't know. Well, I mean, if you are in a place of repressive government, then creativity and artistic originality doesn't tend to flourish. And let's face it, most of the Arab countries are pretty repressive places.
I'm trying to think of any counterexamples, and I'm struggling. I mean, I suspect there are some some Nazi movies, which would be reasonably entertaining if you accept the precepts.
Just as a different observation, not an Arab country, but Iranian cinema. Now there are Iran to this day still makes good movies. That is because there was a period of freedom in Iran, and a film industry came into being in Iran during that period of freedom. And even now that film industry has not been entirely destroyed.
Yes.
I would say that was the case for Germany as well.
Yes. Well, much more the case. Actually, I'm quite surprised because I'm not quite sure when this period of freedom was in Iran. Are we talking under the Shah, or are we talking about this guy Mossadegh?
You probably couldn't carry out a street demonstration under the Shah against the government, but you certainly could. You certainly could make a movie. You also had a period of freedom in Lebanon. There was Lebanese cinema. It's just about the only form of interesting Arab cinema I can just about think of, actually. But again, that's something which didn't really last. But anyway, I'm not an expert on this subject.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but there was another point you were making about when we were sort of chatting about this before we did the recording, was about the Islamists really don't like this at all. They do not like Bollywood.
Well, the nastiest terrorist attack of the last few years is clearly the attacks on Mumbai in late 2008, aren't they?
Hmm.
And it wasn't just India being attacked; it was Mumbai being attacked.
And Mumbai is, I'm not quite sure where Bollywood is. So is that sort of near Mumbai?
Well, Bollywood means Bombay, and Bombay is of course Mumbai.
Yes.
I won't express an opinion in this conversation on whether we should call the city Bombay or Mumbai, but we've got a little bit distracted at this point. But of course, the other thing is that when you are just simply wandering around the back streets of a foreign city, and you hear music being played, what is the origin of the popular music? In North Africa, you hear a lot of Bollywood music, frankly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
I mean there is such a thing as Islamic music. I mean, you don't...
You certainly hear that too. But, again, the music that you are hearing in North Africa is very Bollywood-influenced. It's really quite interesting. I mean, that is the other thing. I mean, when you're traveling anywhere, there are cafes which will show 24-hour news channels, and there are cafes that will show music video channels, or bars that are showing music video channels, often with the sound turned down and entirely different music being played in the bar and cafe too, which is sometimes a little bit strange. But I mean, if you understand that in a lot of places the purpose of music video, of showing the music video channels, is actually to show pretty people gyrating around and not wearing very much. Well, the music itself doesn't matter so much. On the other hand, the music video, the bars showing music videos to the city follow the same patterns as the bars showing the TV news channels in terms of what is the source of the actual music videos. So if you are in Romania, then you will be watching Romanian or maybe French or maybe English news channels on the TV screen, and then you go to Moldova, and there will be a moment when suddenly you go from the Western news channels to the Russian news channels. And similarly, the Western music channels will stop and the Russian music channels will start at exactly the same moment. It's quite fascinating how, to some extent, entirely different genres of satellite television, being music channels rather than news channels, tell you exactly the same thing.
I'm staggered. I really am quite staggered because, I mean, my understanding is that the memory in many parts of Eastern Europe was, Well, I mean, they remember what is effectively a 40-year occupation by the Soviets, sometimes longer, and they don't like... You know, they've been desperately keen to get away from the Russians. I mean, the Poles and the Czechs are classic examples of this.
You won't see Russian music channels, and you won't see Russian news channels in either Poland or the Czech Republic.
Yes.
You may see German news. You may even see German channels in Poland, but you won't see Russian channels. But actually, no. In Poland, you're probably more likely to see English channels, or just in fact Polish channels. Poland is just about big enough to have its own channels anyway. But no, you won't see Russian channels in Poland, in the Czech Republic, in even Romania.
But I'm pretty staggered they have it in Moldova, because my Moldova, you know, it speaks Romanian.
It kind of speaks Romanian.
Well, they're mutually intelligible, aren't they? I mean, the flag. Moldovan is
exactly the same language as Romanian. It's not even a dialect. The trouble is that there are a lot of Russians still there in Moldova.
Right.
You see a lot of now, Moldova was essentially part of Romania prior to the Second World War, and then got incorporated into the Soviet Union. And as happened in the Baltic states, in Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, there were a lot of Russians sent there to settle the place. And there's still a lot of Russians living there, and you get the impression that there's a sort of Russian-speaking mafia which does a certain amount of running the place in Moldova. Frankly, in terms of whose sphere of influence are you in Moldova, you are probably closer to Russia than you are to even Bucharest in some ways. It's run in a sort of very Russian way, and some of the people, you sort of think that Moldova feels like a country where you have a Romanian-speaking elite and a Russian-speaking mafia who sort of run the country sort of in cohorts with one another. And that is sort of reflected in the way where the media comes from. There is, to change the subject a little bit, the government of Romania in recent times has become generous with passports. Essentially, if you are the descendants of somebody who was a Romanian citizen prior to World War II, they are becoming willing to give you a passport.
Mm-hmm.
That is a Romanian passport. And that, of course, could lead to much of the population of Moldova simply getting up and leaving,
yes.
which would probably make the Russian speakers happy.
Which begs the question, why they haven't left? Because my understanding is Moldova is pretty desperate.
Indeed. Well, it would mean that essentially, if the Russian speakers had been trying to colonize the place, they'd have to some extent succeeded, because the Romanians would be, in terms of population terms, you have fewer Romanian speakers and more Russian speakers. But again, it's one of these things. Watching TV in this country, you're walking into a bar or a cafe, and you sit down and you see what's on TV, and you suddenly realise you're in a very different place from Romania, even though people are speaking the same language. Precisely because the influence of the media you're seeing is an entirely different one. You are in a different sphere of influence. And you go to Eastern Ukraine and Western Ukraine, and you see in Western Ukraine, you see a surprisingly large amount of Polish and English. So,
Western Ukraine is Ukrainian, and Eastern Ukraine is effectively Russian, or a lot of Russian speakers.
Maybe Western Ukraine is hung. Or maybe Western Ukraine was ruled by the Austrians, and Eastern Ukraine was ruled by the Russians. Might be the explanation.
Yes.
And you can still feel that in the Western Ukraine. So the interesting thing is that although Moldova feels, frankly, more Eastern than you would expect, and that is reflected on what you see in the TV and the media when you're there, Western Ukraine, frankly, feels less Eastern than you might expect. It feels the the fact that the Austro-Hungarian Empire was there is something you can still definitely feel, even despite all the displacement of population which has occurred subsequently. It's really quite interesting.
It's astonishing, considering the Austro-Hungarian Empire disappeared, almost 100 years ago.
This is true almost everywhere, though. Anywhere it was ruled by the Austro-Hungarian Empire, you can still see it.
Wow.
Go to Slovenia.
You must be doing something right, I guess.
Which
is odd, because you always assume the Austro-Hungarian Empire was doing everything wrong.
Well, in many ways, one thinks it did, yes. But I mean, as you said, the Austro-Hungarian Empire just seems to have left its mark on Europe, really quite in a big way. It's quite remarkable. You can just tell when you're in a place that was ruled by the Austrians.
Right. At risk of going on to another tangent, that is another tangent, but I was wondering, what about other places other than Eastern Europe and the Arab world? Because you've travelled, in all sorts of places in the Far East and, well...
Well, I mean, in Southeast Asia, you go into a bar with a TV on and it will be showing English Premier League football. It doesn't matter if there's an English Premier League football match being played at the time. They'll be showing a replay of a match from 2 days earlier or something like that. As far as I can tell, that's what they do all the time. No, I don't really understand this either. In Australia, they will be showing either cricket, rugby league, or 1980s Australian music videos. I don't really understand that either, and that's where I come from. 1980s Sydney pub rock has its moments, I suppose, but I'm not sure why they've been playing it on TVs in bars for the last 25 years. That is kind of baffling.
You've only just come back from Malaysia, haven't you? What are things like there?
The thing which was the case in Malaysia, and the thing which is also the case in Southeast Asia, is for some reason when they're not showing places which think they're too classy to show English Premier League football will show cooking programs.
Right.
Well, that is, you're sitting at a restaurant. They don't really have bars in these countries, for one thing. They have restaurants. If you want to go out with friends, you don't go out to a place which serves principally alcoholic drinks. You go out to a place which serves principally food, and they will serve alcoholic drinks as well, usually. But that's not the center of it. So food is in some ways sort of central to these cultures in a way. Food and cooking and communal meals are in many ways central to some of these cultures in a way which isn't the case in Europe. And for some reason, they seem to be... The default thing to put on a TV is a cooking program. And it will go all evening. You're sitting at a restaurant all evening having a couple of bottles of Tiger. And there will be one cooking program, there will be a Malaysian cooking program, and then there may be an Italian cooking program in which a pretty Italian girl shows you how to make pasta, and then there'll be another cooking program with some other kind of food following this. Now, it tells you something about the culture, I suppose.
It sounds like a rather good culture, I'd say. I'm trying to actually sort of, see if I can add to this, because I've been to Japan a few times, so know reasonably well. And I'm struggling to think of ever being in a bar. In fact, I hadn't ever been in a bar in Japan because bars tend not to be street side, and they tend to be they're not quite so open to foreigners, I'd say. And I'm struggling to think of ever seeing actually TV outside my hotel room in Japan. I don't know if that's your experience.
The preponderance of sort of flat screen LCD TV panels in bars and cafes and restaurants has become more pronounced in recent years, just about everywhere. Mm. Places which may not have had one 5 years ago sort of will perhaps have one now. So it may be that the sushi bar in the radio station the sushi bar in the railway station in Tokyo has put in a TV on which they're showing cooking programs now, whereas that was not there 5 years ago. I don't know. I haven't been to Japan in 7 or 8 years myself, so I couldn't tell you. But I'm seeing TVs in places where one didn't see TVs a few years ago, in a lot of places.
I mean, do you think this is having a sort of a political influence on this sort of stuff? I mean, it seems to me it's having a sort of slightly frightening influence in places like Moldova and Latvia. But do you think it's having a sort of good influence in places like Morocco and other parts of the of the Arab world. I mean, do you think it has something to do with the Arab Spring, as it's called?
It very possibly did, actually. I don't, again, I mean, it's not just TV, though. It's the internet. It's sort of communication. It's sort of general dissatisfaction. I mean, it's not, the Arab Spring, if, in inverted commas, it's not the first situation in which a group of countries in an area of the world have all had sort of political uprisings at the same time. I mean,
Well, 1989,
and you can go back centuries and you can see instances of this happening. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't necessarily assume that this is anything terribly new, I think. There's another, just to change the subject a little bit, there is a type of music video channel in which you call in on a premium number or send in a premium text message to request the song. And these are often international satellite channels, and so the same channel will be broadcast to a number of countries. And I always find it fascinating when I'm watching one of these music video channels, just to see the list of countries because there will be a list of countries and a telephone number for each country in which you can send in to request a song. And so you're somewhere.
They'll have a flag next to the number, won't they?
Yeah, they'll have a flag next to the number. Yes, and so you will be in Latvia, and you'll see it's a Russian music video channel, and you'll see a number for Russia, for Lithuania, for Latvia, for Estonia, for Moldova, for Transnistria, for Armenia, for Azerbaijan, but not for Georgia. And then there'll be a number for Germany, but most definitely not for Poland. I saw this in Morocco. It was a sort of list of Arab countries, and you'll see Morocco, you'll see the UAE, you'll see Qatar, Bahrain, you'll see Saudi Arabia, you'll see, but you won't see Libya. And
really?
Because Colonel Gaddafi wants to control the media a bit too much.
Wow.
People in Libya may still be watching this channel, but there is not going to be an official Libyan telephone number to request songs, because that would imply some sort of authorization. And no, I've been in South America on one occasion. The list of countries was everything that speaks Spanish in South America except for Cuba and Venezuela.
Well, yes, right, okay.
And again, this is very predictable, but it is very interesting, because you can learn things about who is in and who is out and who is doing business with who just by watching a music video channel in Morocco and just seeing what countries are listed. And again, you may see. And the interesting thing is not just which North African countries and which Middle Eastern countries are listed, but which European countries are listed. In which places in Europe are people, teenagers, watching the Arab music channels?
Well, maybe England, France, Belgium, probably.
Not England, because Britain doesn't really have a working class Arab population. But France, yes. Denmark, Belgium. Not Germany, because again you don't have much of an Arab population in Germany. But I understand many of these population patterns already. But the fact that I can sit in a bar in Morocco, learning things about the demographics of Europe from watching a music video channel, I find fascinating. and there's one thing. As I said, there's this spheres of influence things by which you figure out who are the local political powers or which neighboring countries the political powers by seeing which channels are on TV. One strange thing, though, is, and of course, There's one strange thing, though, which is that you wouldn't see this in North Africa, but throughout the rest of the world, there is one universal TV channel which doesn't change from anywhere to anywhere else, and this is the TV channel Fashion TV. You see Fashion TV in bars and cafes, which feel they are much too classy to show music video channels, because that's sort of tawdry and crass, but who still want to show pictures of attractive women not wearing very much on their TV. And there aren't, whereas there are regional music video channels, and you can see the sort of culture of the place you're in by what the music videos are like, and music videos are sort of highly regional. The Fashion TV channel is just sort of one universal, one universal TV channel which is broadcast throughout the world for people who think they're too classy for music videos.
Which is odd, because there's less happening and there's less music.
Well, you've got to understand, the music video channels aren't about the music. They're about having something happening on the TV screen. When you see music video channels in bars, the sound is turned down as often as not. And of course there is sometimes, and of course there are places where you see sport. I mean, I haven't been to India. I need to go to India and see what bars and cafes in India are like. I have this sort of dream that it'll be a cacophony of Bollywood coming from one corner of the room and cricket coming from the other, but I really don't know.
We'll have to see, and I look forward to you reporting back on that. Michael, we've more or less run out of time, would you believe?
Yeah, well, I think I've been talking a bit, so that's probably a good place to stop, isn't it?